right. We are now joined by a very, very special recurring guest, friend of the podcast. It is Dan Straley. I'm going to say new to the Cubs organization, even though I think you've been there for probably a month now. Also fellow podcaster. So check out the Journeyman podcast, wherever you get your pods. Dan, it's so great to see you. We talked a little bit before this. Really appreciate you giving me a little time on your quote unquote off day with the Iowa Cubs there. So definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. Whenever I get asked back, it means I didn't suck enough to not be welcome back. So I'm happy to be here. I enjoy podcasting. I think it's a great way. It's kind of therapeutic for me too, just to kind of get stuff off my chest, and also too, just let people in a little bit more as to what our world's really about and what we deal with on a daily basis, just to help people realize we're just a bunch of human beings. We're just a bunch of dudes trying to make our way in this world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like you have a great story to tell. Definitely have a lot of stuff to talk about. I just want to say first, congratulations for getting back to affiliated ball. I know you haven't been in the big since 19. You've had a long journey since then. You went to Korea for 4 years, right?
Forever. Yeah.
But have you had a chance to reflect on the journey to get back to the affiliated ball, or will there be time for that later on?
There's always time for that later on, honestly, but I've never played a season of baseball like I am right now with the amount of gratitude and just like appreciation for it after grinding through an off season at home by myself, getting built up at Driveline with no one watching. We haven't alluded to it yet, but I eventually signed a contract to go play for the Long Island Ducks. And I landed in Long Island, didn't throw a pitch, and got a call to come play for the Cubs in AAA. And we were talking about it before we hit the record button, but you know, AAA travel isn't exactly the life of luxury. And I'm not complaining. By no means am I complaining. I was just explaining my day to Justin before we really got going. But it was just like I don't even care. Like, I just am so grateful and so happy and so blessed to be back here. And obviously I'm working for this journey this season to end with me being in the major leagues. I've accomplished so much just getting back to this point that I'm not going to sit there and start like putting this fake pressure on myself and all this other, these deadlines, and start looking around and like, who's doing well, who's doing bad. Like, I'm just focused on myself and really getting to know my teammates, dude. And just feeling blessed and happy to be here.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Was there ever a point though, where in the course of that, you know, the off season at home or the time overseas where you're just like the dream of getting back to the major leagues, did you ever think about like, I don't know anymore, I might give up on this? Was there ever a point where you got close to that?
Dude, well, I'll give you something real right here. So I was sitting there and I was talking to one of my friends, and we just finished up, our kids play a little league together. And, I was like, dude, I feel like I'm a fake baseball player right now. Like, spring training's underway. I think it was about ready to break. And like, I didn't have a job. I didn't have a prospect of a job that I knew of. You know what I mean? Like, I just was driving the Driveline every Friday and busting my butt doing what I knew how to do. But I said, like, you know, dude, I feel like I'm just a fake baseball player. I'm just like faking it right now. Like, no one even wants me. And my buddy just looked at me and was like, dude, shut up. Like, You go up to Driveline and you get your work in, and we'll see you back here Monday for practice, for little league practice. But like, no, you shut up. Like, don't even start that, man. You've come way too far to even let those thoughts enter. And I was just like, dude, you're right, man. Like, I had that moment of like poor me. And it was like, dude, no one feels sorry for you. You know, you're just out there doing your thing. And it was like, you know, no one feels sorry for you. Don't start feeling sorry for yourself. Like, that's not a good spot to be. So luckily I'm surrounded with many people like that, you know, my wife included, my friends included. And, that was kind of the only real moment that I had where I was just kind of that little bit of doubt crept in, because I'm watching guys get hurt left and right and no one's calling. And I just kept going. You know, I had this mantra the whole time. It was like, I got two options, quit or don't. And I just never quit. Just keep working. Just keep going. And so, yeah, man. Just never know in this game. You just never know in this game. And if you would have told me a month ago that I'd be sitting here now, like, I would have told you you're crazy, because I was contemplating if I was going to go to Mexico or go to Long Island. You know, like, I didn't. I was just like, you know, trying to figure out what the best route for me to try to get to where I wanted to be was at. And so just everything happens quick, and you just never know who's watching you in the sport, truthfully. No matter what level you're at, you never know who's actually watching you day in, day out. So I had a good reminder of that from my buddy, and I had a real quick reminder of that when the Cubs called. So that quick moment of doubt here and gone, and now we're just back to work, brother.
It's such a cool thing that, like, the journey you're on to get back to the big leagues, because a lot of guys in your position, 8 years in the majors, you had a lot of success there. You were a workhorse for so many years. A lot of guys in your position probably be like, you know what? I had a good run. You know, I think I want to move on to the next chapter. But I like that you're like, and the guy I do the podcast with, Brian O'Grady, same thing. He's like, I have more to give this game. Like, yeah. I still, like, I'm not at that point yet where I'm like, all right, well, you know, I had a good run, but, you know, thanks, but no thanks. But, like, yeah, so I saw that, and I think a lot of people online were really happy to see that you latch back on with an affiliated team. I want to talk about your driveline experience, though, because I saw, like, they had, like, pro days, and they have you hooked up to all these machines, and I watched, like, the video with all the movement and stuff. When did you start working with them, and, like, what is it like going up to Washington and just, like, working with them? What does that look like?
So I'm actually kind of one of the OGs up there. Like, I've been going to these guys since 2015, like, before it was cool. Like, back when it was just like, I remember the first time I went there, I flew up for the day, and the guy that was heading it up was, his name's Matt Daniels. He's now like some big wig with the Twins. Proud of you, Matt. Shout out to you. But he's like the director of pitching or some fancy title that I don't know what he does quite, but I was like, hey dude, I landed 8. And he's like, all right, dude, we get in at noon. And I was like, he's like, yeah, dude, the place opens like at noon. And it was just like such a different, like, in the moment I was just like, oh, okay. Like, I'll go find an IHOP and hang out for a few hours. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you do? I've never been up there. And, so I did, I just went and got breakfast somewhere. I don't know where it should have been. I don't know if it was an IHOP or not. Probably was, but I just like went and got breakfast somewhere and then just like hung out and waited. And then, like, so I've kind of seen this evolution, and that was like this little, there's one cage, one little plyo area, pretty small weight room. And now it's like a 40,000 square foot. There's like 7 cages and a huge warehouse and enough weight. Like, you could fit like the freaking University of Oregon Ducks football team could lift in there and not even notice it was different. Like, it's just the total space is just, I'm so proud of those guys. So I've got a chance to kind of have a front row seat to their evolution as a company. And they've had a front row seat to the evolution of me as a pitcher, because we've gone hand in hand together for the last whatever years that is. This was the first year that I spent this many days in the gym. A lot of times I've always been a remote athlete, meaning I go up there and do my testing. I get my programming and I go home to Oregon and I work quietly in my garage at the local training facility. I work out Boss Sports Performance and just kind of do my thing. But I don't live in Seattle. Like, yeah, I'm not too far. It's like a 30-minute flight and a 5-hour drive. Like, you know, it's not that far, but like, I'm not, you know, I have wife and kid and I have my life at home too. We all have an off season. But this year I spent a lot of days up there. I spent many, many weeks. And you know, the real reason of that is that baseball was telling me that like what you're doing isn't getting it done. So I went up there and was like, all right, what do I need to change, guys? You know, what's not working anymore? What can we fix? What can we adapt to? What's the game moving towards? And so I learned a sweeper and I changed my cutter into making it a more viable pitch. Like, it's that simple. You know, they're like, hey, try this. I've always been able to spin the ball. Like, anyone's ever seen me pitch, like, I can always spin it. Like, I might not be able to throw it hard past you, but I can spin the ball. And I go up there and they hand me a cutter grip and it's, you know, I throw it the first time and it's like 20 inches of horizontal at 0 vertical. And they're like, oh, I'm like, yeah, what does that mean? And they're just like, dude, like that'll play. And then I just kind of like, okay, like started working on it, you know, and anyone that's ever pitched, you go through this phase where like, when you learn something brand new, you're usually pretty good at it right away. Like if it's like the way you're going to hold the baseball, the way you're going to throw it. And then you go through this valley of like trying to make it better where you just make it worse. And you like start to doubt it. And then all of a sudden, like you become confident with it and it becomes a viable pitch for you. And that was just kind of the progression I went through at Driveline. No different, but what I was doing was going through the testing. You know, we identified certain things in my mechanics that I could try to get better at. You know, it's like, hey, you're strong, but you're slow. And I'm like, all right, cool. How do we fix it? And they're like, well, here's your, go do these lifts, go work out this, go do this. And I'll see you in 6 weeks. We test again. And it's like, hey, all right, you're quicker, but you're not quick enough. Let's keep working there. And now we can start focusing. It's just like small little tweaks and just using biomechanics to like see like how you're actually throwing a ball and how I used to do it versus how I'm doing it now and all these like little things. And it's not just like this like factory of like try to throw hard that like, you know, kind of used to get a rep for with the old run and gun videos from back in like, you know, odd 18 or whatever it was, like when everyone was just getting used to how they put their first YouTube video up and no one really knew how to watch it. And now it's just like, you know, it's like this whole like different world, right, we live in. But yeah, like just going up there and going through the pitch design sessions with these guys. And you know, and then right at the end of it, my pitching coach calls me at drive line. He's like, hey man, I just want to let you know that like I'm taking a job with the Marlins, so I'm actually going to be taking off. And so you know, it's like kind of like any other spot in baseball, you know, people come and people go. And so I went from Brandon Mann to Eddie Yost, and we just kept going. Tried to get Eddie up to speed on like what I was trying to do, what I was trying to work on. And we just kept finishing there. And it's always like always a learning curve when you're changing over coaches and whatnot. But the one thing that they do really well up there is that they're all first in the same things, man. They all speak the same language. They all know what they're doing. They all know what they're talking about in the same way, the same lingo, the same everything. Like the way they like phrase everything is like the same pretty much. They might say it seven different ways to me, but they're saying the same thing out loud. It's just, which one am I going to hear, right, as an athlete? But it was up there just, you know, we went from the pitch design to figuring out what I, Dan Straley, needed to be better at, and then we started just building. And so once I got those pitches identified, we just started playing games every single Friday. So we had a bunch of guys started off with, you know, Triple A, some big league camp invites, live at bats on Fridays. And then those guys left and it turned into the minor leaguers and some indie ball guys. And then the minor leaguers left. And then it was straight up indie ball guys. And there was like four or five of us pitchers that were just up there just every Friday. You know, we were just building. And I was getting up to 80 pitches, 85 pitches. And so these other guys are like, I think I was the only starter. Everyone else was a reliever. So I'm just, hey guys, let's give it 5 minutes and we'll throw another round of 20. And we just kept building, man. Just kept my head down, just kept working. And just kept believing that if I just put this work in when no one's watching, that I'm going to reap the benefits when people are someday. And, you know, circling back a little bit on what you talked about, that self-doubt, or if I ever had any of those moments right there, the one thing that really kept me going, like truthfully, Justin, was that I told my son when this whole process started that if you ever want something in life, that like you just work for it. It doesn't matter if you get rewards for it right away. It doesn't matter if anyone even pats you on the back. It doesn't matter if anyone even notices that you do what you're doing. And so when I'm up there working and I come home, he was my biggest cheerleader, always asking me, Dad, how'd you do? Dad, did you give up a hit today? I'm like, dude, I went 5 innings, gave up a single. And he's like, all right, you'll be better next time. You know, like he just feels it for me, man. And, you know, if I would have quit, I would have had to answer my 6-year-old. And I ain't ready to answer those questions, man. I ain't ready to answer those questions. Anyone out there that's a dad, you can understand that when you're trying to really push something into your kid's life and really live that example for them. Like I was telling him all these things. This is how you push for stuff you fight for. You fight for what you want. You push for what you want. You work. Most importantly, you work for what you want in this life. And then if I just would have been like, yeah, I'm good. Like he would have been like, oh, so like if things get hard, I just get to like walk away. And, you know, and there was just never a plan B. But I always had that in the back of my mind that like, we're on plan A. We've been on plan A for 15 years. Now I get to say 16. We've been on plan A for 16 years. Like we ain't never had a plan B. Why should I start thinking of one now? Right. And so we get up there and we're finishing up these live at bats. And I'm kind of sitting there thinking like, okay, these guys are all leaving for independent season the next week. And man, like, now teams are gonna have independent ball players to look at, as well as guys that are just at these facilities. So I did exactly what you do in the year 2024. I followed the pitching coach and I followed the Long Island Ducks on Instagram. And within minutes, I had a response. Hey, you interested in coming to play here? Sure am, sir. And a couple days later, my agent, we got everything buckled up. In the meantime, I actually had an offer from Mexico to head down there. You know, I just had to tell them, hey, with all due respect, like, I really appreciate it. You guys are offering 7 times the amount that they're offering me in Long Island, but I'm going to hedge my bet on Long Island, and I'm going to bet on myself, and I'm going to stay here in the States. And I had some insight to that. I called a couple buddies that are retired and are now in front offices and running some things in the minor league side and player development, and just said, hey, you know, if all things are equal, like, which one would you guys be more willing to look at? And, you know, for the most part, everybody said the same thing. Like, you know, you should just head yourself to New York. And so I did that and kind of wrapped up my driveline season and then, you know, headed up there. And the amount of gratitude I have towards those guys as well, man, is it's so immense. Like, I honestly just can't thank them enough. Like, right. Yeah. Like, they're dudes doing their jobs too. Like, these are dudes that are trying to get into professional baseball. Maybe not all of them. You know, dudes that are just trying to make a name for themselves, dudes trying to provide, make an income, you know, whatever their goals and aspirations are, like, right. But they took this time and they made me feel like I was their only client at times, dude. And that's like, that to me, that's special. Like, to be one of whatever, like, I don't know how many clients they had because I never asked, but like, I know I'm not the only one, but like, Eddie Yost made me feel like I was the only dude. And like, that's all I could ask for, dude, is just get up there and I'm going to put the work in. Somebody kind of put that time and effort back into me, just kept me going, dude. And like I said, dude, I'm just grateful for that experience in life. I mean, I don't need to go through it again. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, but I'm grateful for that experience in life because it really showed me a lot about who I am as a person and allowed me to show my son who you need to be as a person if you want to chase your dreams and chase your goals. And, you know, and then I also got to explain to him that just because I got here to AAA doesn't mean we're done. Like,
yeah,
like that ain't the goal. It's just step one, right? So
job's not finished.
Yeah, it's never finished, dude. It's never been finished. It's for year 16 and we're still working towards it, right?
I love that, though. You put in the work and it paid off. I love the Tom Brady clip that I saw recently where he's like, the fish just don't jump in the boat. You have to go out there. You have to put the work in. Nothing's given to you. That I love that kind of stuff. So you're killing it, dude. I know we're in AAA, but that's pretty close. We're almost there to getting back to the big leagues. Phone call away. I had a question about when pitchers get older and they get, you know, into the later stages of their career. I'm not saying they're there.
You can say it.
But I mean, 35 is not old.
Hey, it's pretty old in baseball. It's pretty old in baseball. You're good. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. How hard is it for pitchers to try and reinvent themselves or like have like a second act? Cause like some guys do it really well. Yeah. Like I know CC Sabathia went from like upper 90s to like later part of his career was different. You talked about you added a sweeper and you changed some of your arsenal a little bit, but like, what is it like and how hard is it trying to like adjust to what your body can give as a pitcher in the later part of your career?
Yeah, dude, for sure. Like when I was, 21 and I got to 0-2 and catch a put down fastball up, like I could throw as hard as I could and probably run a 93, 94 every now and then, touch a 5 up there and run it by you. And like, now I'm like, all right, dude, here's my 90. Good luck. You know, it's just like, it just is what it is. Right. So we like to play a little game called hide the heater, as we like to call it now. So I don't, I just don't go up there and throw 60 fastballs a game anymore. That's really what it is. You know, you say reinvent yourself, you know, it's the same. We're all saying the same things. We're just trying to figure out how to get the most outs every single time I'm given the baseball. I was pretty proud of this. I've had 3 starts here in AAA and, we get these reports after each game. And, I think it was like 13, 15 and 17 swing and misses in my first 3 starts. And I'm like, it's not too bad for a guy that's, you know, sitting below league average in velo. Like, I'm pretty proud of that. Like, that's a cool, I feel like young Dan would be proud of that number. But you just get up there, dude. And I think the biggest lesson you got to learn in baseball is that what used to work ain't always going to work going forward. You know, just because you used to be able to do something doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it now. I've seen that one a handful of times. I've had some friends have to go through that lesson and kind of learn that one the hard way. Or it's like, hey, man, reverting back isn't exactly always the answer. Like, let's figure out how to get it done now. Let's not just try to redo what we did 5, 10, 15 years ago. Like, we're not the same person. We're not the same body. We're not the same anything. You know, my back doesn't feel the same. I didn't feel my back 15 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, it's just how the world works. But you just kind of, yeah, you do. And I gotta just lean on stuff I've heard from people in front of me, right? That's all we get in this world, is we get a chance to ask questions and be students of the game and be listeners of the people that came before us. And when I was a rookie, I was out jogging in the outfield, Yankee Stadium on a Friday. I was pitching on Sunday. And I was jogging past the Yankees bullpen, and I just hear, "Hey, meet me in the corner, young man, we're going to jog together." And I was just like, look up, and Andy Pettit was standing right there. So I just, you do exactly what you do when you're 23, and Andy Pettit tells you to wait in the corner of the stadium, wait by the foul pole. You go wait by the foul pole, right? I had like two poles left. This was back when we ran poles. But I swear I ran 10, 15 extra poles, because Andy Pettit wanted to, you know, first and foremost, tell me congratulations on making up to the big leagues. And then I would just start asking him questions, man. And one of the things I asked him was just like, you know, "Mr. Pettit, sir," I'm sure it's probably exactly how I said it, because I grew up watching it, man. You know, I mean, I grew up idolizing this guy. He was a stud. And I said, "Hey, man, how did you adapt and stay in the league for so dang long, man?" And he was like, "You just got to be willing to do whatever it takes to get outs today. And if that means you're going to lean on a certain pitch more than you usually lean on it," you know, he's like, "You know, we're becoming more heavy cutter at the end of his career and all this kind of stuff. And the type of pitcher he was at the end, like, sure, there's similarities, right? Still left-handed, still great pickoff moves, still same mechanics, but the way you use it has to be able to change." And that never went away for me, man. You know, being able to hear that from such an established big leaguer. And you can hear these things as players, and you can just be like, dude, you can walk away from that and be like, dude, I met Andy Pettit today. Or you can walk away with that and be like, dude, Andy Pettit might have just unlocked something that's going to buy me a few years more in my career. And so that, to me, that's just something that's just never been let go of. And so, like, how do I apply that to myself, right? Like, that's how I'm wired. So it's like, I can hear that, but how do I use that? How do I apply that? So it's like, all right, how do I keep doing what makes me good, do more of that, but then also try to figure out other ways to, like, make what I do well, like, what I do well, how do I make that look even better, right? And so, you know, we just had to kind of retool some stuff, and yeah, reinvent is another way to put it. And it's all good, man. Like, you know, I started off this whole thing this offseason was like, dude, I'm gonna be the next Rich Hill. You watch this. Like, that was like my whole goal, where it was like, who's to say I can't be doing this in 5, 6, 7 years from now? You know, I nobody. Like, let's go put in the work and let's see what happens, right? But I know I'm willing to do what Andy told me, you know, back in 2012, jogging those poles in Yankee Stadium. And that's just keep adapting to whatever you need to get outs today. And that's just like small stuff like that, man. If you just have the ability to listen as a ball player to the people that came before you and just take those words of wisdom and skip some of those steps in the learning curve, like, it's all for your benefit. And so, again, man, like, we talked about it last time, some of the stuff with Joey Votto and this and that. And it's just like, you just got to be a student of the game, man. You got to respect the guys that have been there in front of you. And you got to be willing to, like, really, like, dive into and meet them, as find out who they are as a person and find out who they are as a ball player, because there's a reason certain dudes stick around this game for so long.
I'm so glad you brought up Rich Hill, because I was having this conversation the other day. 44 years old. He had three teams call him this year, and he's like, I want to wait a little bit. Three teams. And it's crazy. Yeah, he's been around for so long. Do you think that with all of, like, there's like an arm injury crisis happening, you know, guys are having these elbow problems from throwing too hard, do you think teams are coming around on, are they valuing guys as such as yourself who don't have to rely on velocity? Is that having like a renaissance right now, you think?
You know, I'll toot my own horn with this. I've played this game going on my 16th season right here, and I've missed 5 starts. Like, maybe. Like, that's like, they just don't make them like this anymore. You know what I mean? I can say that, Justin. You know, that's fair to say.
It's so good, though.
and, you know, I think a big credit to that is, like, I'm not a scientist by no means. I'm going to leave that up to the boys up in Seattle at Driveline. But I think there's got to be something to the fact that I don't throw all that hard, that maybe I'm just not putting the torque on my body the same way. Maybe I am, and maybe I'm just built different. Like, I don't know. But at the end of the day, like, you know, another quote I'm going to lean on here. You know, Johnny Gomes told me this when I first got up to the big leagues. And he goes, you know, there's two ways to get paid in this game. And then he just, like, leaves you hanging. And now you have to engage. I'm like, all right, Johnny, what you got? And he goes, you got to be decent or you got to be durable. And I've always hung on to that. When he says decent, he's talking like Jacob deGrom, Clayton Kershaw. Like, he's being a little sarcastic with the decent. He's saying, like, you got to be so dang good that, like, you might not pitch all the time, but when you pitch, like, no one's touching home. Like, no one's scoring. Or you just always have to be available. And not that you can, like, you can't work on that, right? Like, that's nothing that's like a God-given thing, man. Like, you know, what you have genetically in your arm is what you have genetically in your arm. Yeah, we can take safety measures and pay attention to workload and do all this kind of stuff. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, I had knee surgery, meniscus surgery, and I have to thank my mom for just my bad knees. Like, that's just genetically, that's where it comes from, right? So, you know, a lot of these things, like, no matter what I did, wasn't going to stop my meniscus from getting torn. You know, there's just certain things you can't avoid. But yeah, I think that baseball is, in a way, reverting a little bit to having more guys like myself around. And how do you go back like that? You know what I mean? Like, to an extreme. And I think it's just like, you know, having certain players around that you just know that you can depend on, that you're going to be around 5 or 6 innings and around 2 to 3 runs. Like, I've done that my entire career. Rarely am I 7-0s on the board, but rarely am I 2 innings and done. Rarely am I 5 innings and 5 runs. Yeah, it's happened. Don't get me wrong. Like, someone's out there is probably going to go look this up and be like, you did it 14 times. But, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, hey, man, like, I'm sure I have. But, like, you know, more often than not, like, we're getting up there, we're getting 6 innings, and we're getting around 2 to 3 runs of baseball. And there's just a lot to be said to that, man. Brian Price, the pitching coach for the San Francisco Giants, told me I was his favorite day when I started. And I was like, Brian, why is that? Like, you know, we got some dudes around us. And he's like, I don't have to top step it, man. I can just sit back and know you're going to be around 6 innings and we're going to be in the ballgame. And he's like, there's a lot of value in that, dude. Like, just keep going. And then I got traded and, you know, but it's just like somebody else saw value in it more than they did. But at the end of the day, that's fair. At the end of the day, like, it's just, you know, I'm grateful that the Cubs called. I'm grateful that they saw something in me that I was going to fill a hole. I was going to fill a need. You know, I don't know their grand plan. I don't know if their grand plan's like, dude, we see the next Rich Hill. If their grand plan was like, we have nobody in AAA just to eat innings. We need Dan. Like, but without a chip in a chair, you don't ever get an opportunity in this game, man. And so I don't really care that, you know, how I got to where I'm at. Like, I'm here. I'm ready to work. I'm ready to go try to put up as many zeros as I can. And, you know, I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit too. I'm pretty proud of myself for getting through 3 starts without having a spring training and, like, holding my own, man. Went 3 innings, I think, the first time, 5 innings. Like, I'm pretty proud. Like, it could have been better, dude. Could have been better. But it's like, I've showed up and they were just like, are you sure you're built up to 85 pitches? My agent was like, yeah. Like, you guys are sure. Like, you're not just – this isn't like an agent move. Like, you guys are sure he's built up to 85 pitches. My agent's like, yeah. They're like, well, how do you do that? And my agent explained it, and they're like, well, good on you guys.
We interrupt this episode to bring you a word from the official sponsor of Not For Long Media and the Breaking Bats podcast, the Original Fudge Kitchen. It is a staple of the Jersey Shore with 6 locations in Cape May, Wildwood, North Wildwood, Stone Harbor, and Ocean City. The Original Fudge Kitchen makes all of their fudge in-store, guaranteeing a delicious product, so stop by and let them know that Not For Long Media and Breaking Bats sent you. Check them out online at fudgekitchenswithans.com as they are shipping fudge and sweet treats all across the country. Now back to the episode.
We didn't pass the physical, though. Yeah.
You said something in there that it really got me thinking, is just like, some guys have like that God-given like ability to like throw later, longer and later into their careers. Is that the case for guys who are still pumping high velocity late into their 30s? And because I was watching Charlie Morton the other night, guys still bringing it. Guys bringing up mid-90s to upper 90s fastball. I know Verlander has been ticking down every year, but he was another guy that I feel like has always been high velocity, almost at 40. Is velocity later in your career something that is like a modern medicine? Like, taking care of yourself thing, you think? Or is it just like that guy's arm is just a little bit different?
You know, I look at it like this, like my career average fastball, like nobody get excited here. It's like 90.2. All right. I got 800 innings in the big league so far in my life. You know, it's going to, the goal is to add on to that. Right. But my average fastball is 89.2. And like, I'm proud of that. I know we joke around about it just because like the average fastball now is like 94 point something, but I'm probably averaging 89.7 right now. And I didn't have a spring training. Like, so I've been around my career average, like so far right now. And I still feel like I'm ready. Like, obviously like I'm throwing in games, but like, you know, I'm still certain times where I feel out of sync and certain times I feel like I don't feel right. It's like, you know, some of the, you know, competition stuff, but I do think that there is something to that, right? Like my 100 was 90.2. Like Verlander's 100 is 102, right? Like, it's just like everybody's 100% effort is what it is. And I don't know if there's like a magic pill to it. But I do think that, you know, falling in love with the mundane things in this game has probably helped me a lot. Falling in love with the boring ass arm care, falling in love with the weight room, you know, taking care of going out for jogs and make sure my cardio is up so I can go out there and throw 100 pitches every fifth day, you know, just like the stupid stuff that, and I read a book, Mattingly put it on our books or put these books in our lockers to start a spring training. I think it was like 2019 maybe. And it's called Chop Wood, Carry Water. And it's about this guy that wants to go over to Japan and become a samurai. And all he wants to do is be a samurai. And he shows up and they're like, all right, dude, day one, go down, follow this path, chop up all the firewood, bring it up here, bring up all these buckets of water and fill up these bins. The guy's like, all right, goes and does it. Next day, wakes up, he's like, all right, I'm going to be a samurai. And they're like, all right, go down this path, chop the wood, carry the water. You get what I'm getting at? A year later, he's still chopping wood, carrying water, man. Like, you got to just fall in love with the mundane things in this world if you want to be the best in the world at something. Like, it's not the stuff that you guys all get to see on TV and the flashy stuff like that. Like, that's just, that's the performance, man. Like, that's where it all comes to fruition. It all starts in November and December, January, February, when all these athletes are just at home grinding, preparing their bodies, trying to get everything right. And, you know, I think part of it too is like, I've never woken up on a Thursday in the off season and just been like, I think I'm good today. I'm just going to play Call of Duty and go golfing. Like, I've never had that day. Like, every single day, it's like I have something to do. If I personally want to do something else, like, I have to accomplish my baseball stuff first because I'm on plan A. Like, this is what we do. It's just kind of, it's like, you remember the movie Anchorman?
Yeah.
Pancake breakfast. We do it every month. Like, no matter what happens, we don't break our routine here. And so it's just like, that's just where we're at in life, man. Like, we just keep rolling with what we got. And, you know, I can't speak to the other guys that are, you know, 35 plus out there still chucking baseballs, but like, that's kind of how I've done it. It's just falling in love with the mundane, the chop wood, carry water mentality, and just always been willing to adapt on how I can get more outs and just being coachable and just really trying to lean on these guys that know more about the game than I do. Like, that, to me, it's just that simple. It really is.
I like that. All right. I had a couple last questions. Then I have some rapid fire for you. Paul Skeens made his debut, much anticipated debut for the Pirates. A lot of people were throwing out comparisons to Steven Strasburg.
Right.
And I know that you faced him in games. You pitched against Strasburg. You're obviously in the division with peak Strasburg. Like, how do you kind of assess that comparison? Would you say that's an accurate one given your background with Stras?
I mean, I was Steven Strasburg, 1,000 strikeout, for all those wondering. It's in the record books. And I was also 997 and probably 994. But anyway, it was a rough day. But in my mind, a little bit of an unfair comparison, truthfully, because like, Strasburg came up and did that when like nobody else was doing it, right? We didn't have like Twitter was pretty new. Remember back when it was called Twitter? You know, mm-hmm. Now we call it X. So it's like all these things were just so different. That stuff was all pretty new. You know, the baseball Twitter wasn't really a thing yet. It was just kind of forming. And like, I kind of feel for Skeens a little bit just from having the absolute weight of the world on his shoulders. But kudos to him for showing up and just being as exactly as advertised, man. I don't think that guy showed up and tried to be anything else other than himself. He didn't look rattled, didn't look anything. I mean, I've had my first start in the big leagues before. I know what's going through your head. I didn't do it as the number one anticipated guy to make a debut since 2010. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, obviously I'm rooting for the Cubs in that situation. I have to. Like, that's my hometown team. Like, that's my boys. But I do have to say, I walked in the clubhouse. I was pitching that day. I was kind of upset the world wasn't excited about my start. But I walked in the clubhouse, and every single member of my team was sitting in front of the TV watching it, dude. I guarantee you that statement rang true for every clubhouse across America that wasn't on the field getting work in. We all tuned in, dude. You can't. That stuff's electric, absolute electric. And I just love it for the game that they were able to take a guy that was a super hype prospect and keep him hyped all the way to his ascension, and then to continue to hype his debut. It was almost like MLB got it right, dude. Where, like, mm-hmm. They got it right with, like, let's not draft this guy, let the world forget about him, and then all of a sudden call him up. Like, it was really cool to see that whole process. I totally forgot what your question was, if we're being completely honest. But I just I do feel like it was a little bit of an unfair comparison to the Strasburg one, especially just – it's just like a different time. It was just a different time. These hitters have been seeing 100, not from starters every day. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's still freakish. Like, the splunker, is that what they call it? That I've never even heard of that other than – like, thing, the one other guy, I think you have to throw over 104 to be able to throw a splunker. When I do it, they just call it a changeup. So, like, it's just a different word. But his stuff is absurd. It was so fun to just get to see that. But I did feel like it was a little bit of an unfair advantage to compare him to Strasburg.
Yeah. I don't know if there's just, like, not that many other people to base it off of in recent memory. It's like, oh, number one prospect making his debut. Right. All right, he's Strasburg, and he throws kind of hard. I don't know. I like Skeens a lot. I think he's going to be a really good pitcher. Have you ever seen a pitcher that's reminded you of yourself? Who's the next Dan Straley?
Like, younger guy?
Yeah, coming up, or that you've seen, or you're just like, you know what? Kid's got it.
The kid's got it. Dude, I don't know. I think I was in Korea too long to really answer that. I mean, I'm sitting here with Cade Horton, and the kid got roughed up a little bit in his last game, and he's had two starts in AAA. And I was like, dude, I actually just took him out to dinner tonight. And I was just like, dude, like, you're going to be fun to watch, man. I'm going to be sitting on the couch with my son watching this game, watching you shove for the next decade, man. This is going to be cool. And I get to say that I took you out to dinner tonight, you know? And, but you just get a chance to, like, see someone like that. And, I was actually more intrigued. I wanted to hear more about his quarterbacking days at Oklahoma than I did about his baseball career.
I remember that.
Yeah, I was super intrigued by that. No, but I really do think that he's got his stuff just kind of special. And, once he gets over a little bit of the, I don't know, maybe nerves, maybe new place. Like, I don't know. Like, he's had like a year and he's in AAA. And I was like, I had 100 starts before I got to the big leagues. And like, that was quick. Like, that felt quick at the time. Like, that wasn't, that was like kind of a normal path. And now, things are just changing. And these guys are getting, can't call them kids because they're grown men, but these guys are getting to the big leagues so much quicker now. And they haven't had a chance to experience that success and experience that failure and all this kind of stuff. But I really think that this guy Cade that I'm with right now is going to be something special. I know that's low hanging fruit because he's all the prospect rankings say he's going to be, but like when you just watch him throw from behind, I go out there and I've watched both of his starts from him warming up, and it's just different, man. It's just special. It's just the way the ball comes out of his hands is different. And I'm sure there's a bunch of guys out there that you could say that about, but it's just like easy cheese, man. It's just easy and it's firm, and it just the breaking ball, like he threw this curveball that, like, if I were to get a ball to move like that, it's got to go like 65 miles an hour, and he throws it at 87. You're just like, dude, good for you, man. Like, God gave me the ability to do this for a long time, and God gave you the ability to throw a billion. Like, that's awesome.
I love that. All right, we'll do some last ones here for you. I saw a video on Twitter X. I think it was from Pitching Ninja, where Twitter X. And this is 2020 in Korea. You shook off the catcher 9 times. Mm. What happened? Yeah.
So I think that was one of those situations where I was like, hey, let's throw a front hip slider to this guy. And we just call everything else. Like everything else. And this is like my personal catcher over there too. It wasn't like this was like a random dude. Like this is like my personal catcher. And it probably just was early on in the season. And yeah, dude, it's not the first time I've done it. Like I don't throw 9 pitches. But I do throw most of my pitches to both sides of the plate. So we got a lot of stuff to go through. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Just sitting there, just nope.
What did you end up throwing?
Probably a ball at that point. Hey, if you do it, it's like if I'm holding the curveball and the catcher doesn't call it right away, like I can't shake to it because I never throw it for a strike. And it's just like some of those like weird things. Like if I throw a curveball in a game, it's because I was holding it and the catcher called it. It's just like how it works. Like I don't get why or I don't have a magic answer for that. But when I'm feeling pretty convicted on the pitch, like I'll shake for it. You know, a lot of times it's like I believe in my stuff too much to a fault where it's like, you know, you call it, I'm probably going to throw it because I know that's probably the right pitch. But like if I'm really convicted on something and I'm pretty sure it was a front hip slider that I was trying to get to. Maybe it was just like a heater away and they were just like, dude, do not throw a fastball. Thank you. No, I'd have to go back and review the tape.
That's like when Zach Greinke was calling his own pitches and he shook himself off. I don't know if you ever seen that. It's one of my favorite.
I have. Dude, Zach's, yeah. And then he'll give his own.
Have you played against Zach?
I have a couple times. Yeah, my second big league start, I gave up 5 runs in 5 innings, 4 homers, and Zach did the same thing on the other side for the Angels. We both walked away 5-5, and I was just like, man, I was so beat up at myself, and I was like, dude, wait, if Zach Greinke can do it, and I can do it, like, okay. Like, I can't be mad at myself. If it happened to Zach Greinke too, like, and he didn't have to face Trout, then, like, I'm okay.
I will never get tired of listening to stories about Zach Greinke because I think they're all fantastic. And also last time your Joey Votto stories, I think my side still hurts from just like the birthday. You asking him advice for hitting. Was there anything else that like stood out from Joey Votto to you that like kind of resonated with you all these years later?
Yeah, actually nothing cool like you're expecting, but I was actually just really sad. My first start this year for the Iowa Cubs was against the Buffalo Bison. Is that their mascot?
I think so.
And Joey wasn't there. I was pretty let down. I was really looking forward to Joseph Daniel Votto getting in the box and him taking extremely close pitches and challenging the umpire's calls. I was really looking forward to that. Oh man, no, what a human being, dude. There's like, you know, just a full year's worth of stuff that I could say about Joey, but. You know, just dude, super generous dude. And just, you know, just nothing, wish nothing but the best for him. And, yeah, I got nothing on top of the head, just screaming at me to shout out loud to the world right now for you.
He's the best. Guy stole banks. I have no doubt he's going to come up with the Blue Jays and start mashing homers.
He'll find a way to like work his way into like the batting title somehow. He just will.
Yes. That's what Joey does.
That's what Joey does.
What was the most memorable pitcher hitter duel of your career? Did somebody have like a super long at bat off of you where you're just like, please, for the love of God, put this in play? Like, what was there anything off of the top of your head?
If you were to go back and I might get some of this wrong, but if you were to go back and look up myself first, Torrey Hunter was my daddy. All right. We're talking like 7-9 with like 4 homers and 2 doubles. And I go face him, and I'm walking out of the game in Detroit, out of the clubhouse, and he's, like, standing right outside our clubhouse. And I was just like, hey, father, how are you? Like, I don't know what to say here. Hey, Torrey, how you doing? And he was just, you know, he spoke some wisdom into me. We'll put it that way. He took his time after he owned me for – he wore a couple different jerseys and owned me. It wasn't like he owned me under one roof. Like it wasn't one day. It was a couple different times. There were some walks in there too, by the way. And he spoke some wisdom into me. We'll put it that way. And then we get to the playoffs that year, and I strike him out three times. And I have a signed jersey at my house from Torrey Hunter. Like, and to me, that probably means the most of all of them, where it's just like somebody that owned me, but like still took the time at the end of his career to like speak something into me as a player and build confidence in me as a player. Just meant the world to me, man, to like see something like that. So, maybe not quite the answer you're looking for, but that's the first one that comes to mind, where somebody that just, God, just please throw it and just get it over with. Like, no matter what I do here, he's going to hit it out. Like, just get it over with.
That's awesome. Did you, I looked this up. Did you play with Ichiro in Miami?
I did. One of my absolute favorite teammates. I got to be real careful what I say about Ichi, though.
I heard that his batting practice was the stuff of legend. I don't know if you saw any of that. Can you attest to that he was just launching balls over the fence with ease in batting practice?
When he wanted to. Like, you knew exactly what Ichiro was wanting to do that day, because that is what happened. So, like, if he came up there and, like, hit 17 balls perfectly down the left field line that hit the chalk, it's because that's what he wanted to happen. If he wanted to leave the yard six times in a row, pull side, it's because that's what he wanted to happen. Dude, it's one of the most impressive human beings I've ever been around. The attention to the detail, the never-wavering routine. You know, we talked about Votto's routine when he was struggling and how he just did the same thing every single day. Like, Ichiro never really struggled, but he did the same thing every single day. Those two guys are cut from the same cloth, man. It was incredible to be his teammate. Something that if you go to ballparks early, back when Ichiro was playing, and probably still now, because I'm sure he's still around at Safeco all the time, he has this incredible, like, almost like a bow catch that he does in the outfield during batting practice. And I gave him permission. I was like, dude, please, on the next fly ball to right field with nobody on and two outs, please let me be a part of this video where you catch a ball like that. I give you permission to try to catch a ball like that. And he told me he was going to, and then it just never lined up, man. I was like so ready to be in that video Hall of Fame with him, of me giving up a lazy pop fly to right field and him just doing this like behind the back bow catch that he literally would do it 10 times a day in batting practice, and maybe once a week you'd see him miss one. Like, it was immaculate, dude. But yeah, his batting practice was a lot of fun. You just enjoy the show when you're around that guy, dude. Like talk about being around legends. I've been blessed with being around some really good ball players in my day, and he takes the cake, dude. It's that simple. He does.
That's so funny. Yeah, I feel like I saw, like, he threw like a first pitch full uniform with cleats on, pumping like 90 something not too long ago. He could still play. Like you said, maybe he just doesn't want to. If he wanted to, he could, but he just doesn't want to.
Yeah, I'm sure it's deep down in there. It's still probably a desire. I'm sure he plays, still hits, still does everything. Like, it's just baseball is ingrained in it, man. It's just who he is. I know he's at the Mariner games. If you pay real close attention, when they win, he's usually one of the first people out of the dugout. He's not allowed in the dugout during the game, but as soon as that game's over, he's one of the first people out of the dugout.
Probably still got a uni on. Yeah.
Full uni. I think he's up in the cage working with the hitters that aren't playing that day, every day. I think that's what he does. I could be wrong. That was a couple years ago. Things might have changed, obviously, but like last time I talked to him, he was still living up in Seattle and doing his thing.
I love that. All right, last question for you, Dan. Your baseball reference has two nicknames listed. It's apparently Rojo and Thunder. Can you tell me if there's a story behind those and if you have a preference for either one?
MLB wouldn't let Ginger in. And so we were just trying to come. So that's not exactly it. But the pitching coach in Miami my first year, his name's Juan Nieves. He gave us all Caballo nicknames. Juan's from Puerto Rico. And so we all had different Caballos. We had Flaco Caballo, Feo Caballo. If you know Spanish, you're following right along. We had the Viejo Caballo, and I was the Rojo Caballo. And so I was just the red horse, you know. If you want to catch up, we also had the old and the skinny and the I forget what the what Tom was. Maybe the ugly, the Feo Caballo. And so we all had a Caballo tied to our name. So I was Rojo that year. And ironically enough, Driveline is going to pop back up here. I was kind of, you know, a big part of helping Driveline do some marketing, some stuff when they first were kind of a new company. And so I tried to get Driveline put on my nickname, like Mr. Driveline. And MLB wouldn't let me do it. And so we tried a couple different ones. Driveline even signed a form saying like they, you know, Dan has the permission to use our likeness and all this, and MLB wouldn't do it. So they regulate those pretty strictly, which is, it is what it is. I get it. And then the other one, Thunder, Juan was gone. I didn't want to be Rojo again. And so our bench coach, Wallach, was just like, you know, Thunder Dan, there you go. Go write it down. Okay. I went over and wrote down Thunder Dan, you know, speaking of nicknames, I was sitting there and AJ Ellis was on my team my first year in Miami, and he couldn't figure out what to put down. You know, not everyone has a cool nickname, right? And I was just like, dude, like not trying to be anything other than a real human being moment. I was just like, dude, what's the favorite nickname you've ever had in your life? And he was like, I don't know. Like, I was like, Dad, when your kids call you Dad, man, that's like, that's the coolest nickname in the world, bro. When your kid calls you Dad, like, that's not your name, but when your kid calls you Dad, tell me that's not your favorite nickname. So he wrote down Dad. Well, the media took it as like, he's the team Dad. And so everyone started calling him Dad in the clubhouse. All the players started calling him Dad. And I was just like, no, that wasn't the spirit. That wasn't what we meant. Oh, man.
It was wholesome. Yeah.
It was, but he took it like a champ. AJ's an absolute just class act human being. And, you know, he never made me feel bad about that. Never made me feel anything other than being proud of being a dad and being proud of he was our team dad in a way. Every single person in our clubhouse looked up to him, and every single person in our clubhouse was just eager to learn from him on how to be a big leaguer, how to navigate lineups, how to, you know, if nothing else, what does Clayton Kershaw do? Like, that's probably what he got asked more than anything else, as well as Kershaw's routine. But like, we all, you know, those nicknames aren't the easiest things to come up with. As you know, the fun ones, like, you know, Corey's brother, like those things are cool. Like those ones get big laughs. Those ones are awesome. Or, you know, the other Bieber, but like
Rich Hill.
Yeah.
Dick Mountain.
Yeah. I like that. That's good. Like, that's like really funny, but like you know, there's so few of them out there that are actually really good. I didn't like love mine by any means. But I also, you know, I tried to be the weirdo one year because that's what Miguel Rojas called me from, you know, now everyone does it, but I was throwing Driveline balls into the wall, and he's like, you're just doing all this weird stuff all the time, like throwing these balls into the wall. It's like, you're a weirdo. So I tried to write that down. MLB wouldn't let me be the weirdo, so I just gave in. I was like, let Wallach pick it. So I walked out to Thunder, and he put Thunder on the back, and I was like, this is whatever. Like, I got a jersey that says Thunder on it at home now, so we're set. What else do you need in life?
What year was that? Players Weekend?
Yeah, that was Players Weekend. Rojo would have been 2017. Yeah. And Thunder would have been 2018.
They need to bring that back. I mean, like, I know there's not that many cool nicknames, but like, it was so cool. Oh, they are
this year. Yeah, but no nicknames, just the Players Weekend. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's a bummer. Well, hey, yeah. Thunder Dan. Yeah, I kind of like that. It's got a nice ring to it.
I mean, now I just go Day Game Dan. That's like kind of all I do these days, is throw day games. So
Day Game. Hey. Dan.
Yeah. That's when I was in Reno, it was just Old Man Dan because I was older than everybody else there. Now at least I'm not the oldest guy. Although Peralta just opted out, so I'm the second oldest now, but we're hanging on tight. Still got Kurt Casale still leading the way, so I'm still not the oldest one here.
A spry 35, yeah.
Right.
Dan, this has been incredible. I always love when we have you back on. So best of luck with the Iowa Cubs the rest of the way. We're hoping to see you pitching at Wrigley Field. I wore my Wrigley Field shirt for this. I don't know if you
know. Oh, I saw. Always saw.
I was like, I got one Cub shirt. It's
there
for
we
Dan.
Go. Nailed it.
We're gonna manifest that a Wrigley Field appearance. But everyone's go subscribe to the Journeyman Podcast. I always like to support just a fellow podcaster out there. So
appreciate you.
Dan, you're the man. Really appreciate your time. And before we get out of here, a special thank you to the band Stick Figure for allowing us to use today's intro and outro music. Playing on your radio, coming through your stereo, it ain't